This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Monday, 11th of October, 2021. Very interesting set of data points out of the U.S. in this jobs report and also the way the market read it versus what it may actually reflect. And we'll get to that in a moment. But for now, what we saw and the most important thing we saw was that the sort of attempt to put together a rally faded, and we actually closed towards the lows. We're a little bit lower overnight. A very strong Asian session has kind of shifted the mood a little bit, but U.S. equity is still those key resistance levels we talked about on Friday and late last week as well. If you see on slide two, in the case of the S&P 500, the 61.8% retracement just below 4,400, which we have exceeded, but we've not closed above there, also near the 21-day moving average. But the key market really was the U.S. yields. And I'll jump ahead just one slide just to remind folks what happened there. And I think an interpretation of the jobs report as less weak or showing other things than what we initially reacted to when we saw yields headed back higher to new highs for the cycle and since the June timeframe. This, I think, spooked, I guess, Peter, especially those highly valued companies. What's your takeaway, not just from the U.S. session, but what we're seeing overnight as well?
Yeah, I think actually our headline for the Q4, the dissonance in equities is still a tune that is sounding very well in my ears, because we have that sell-off on Friday. We have the U.S. interest rates powering higher. That's obviously causing some disturbance among the growth pockets. We saw that with the Nasdaq 100 futures down. They're following lower again this morning. We're floating around the 100-day moving average. The flip side of that weakness is the strength out of Asia, or at least in China, with the Hang Seng technology futures now, I think, up more than 8% from the lows. They rebounded to the 61.8 retracement level in the Hang Seng futures. We have also the CSI 300 futures a little bit higher here. And we have mainland China back into the game. But what I find disturbing is that high yield yields moving higher in China, right? So you can see that on slide four. It is above 1,800 basis points, and you have this Chinese developer Modern Land asking to delay bond repayments for 3 months. I mean, there's a brewing crisis in the Chinese housing sector. You also have in Germany suddenly a housing company, Adler Group, in trouble. There are cracks here and there, and we have a galloping commodity sector that we will talk about. You have iron ore up 10% in China. You have new record high prices in coal, which is very bad for solar cells. We have the earnings season coming soon, and that will focus on these input costs. And then also you have financials suddenly being extremely bit because of this reflation trade. So I think there's actually a lot of things going on, John. And we have Asos, one of the big e-commerce retail, fashion retailers out of the UK, reporting, and I should say, firing another warning shot as we go into this earnings season, that the supply constraints will be with us for the entire first half next year, and that the supply constraints are actually getting worse. And that's because a lot of Asian countries are, being pressured by these COVID-19 waves.
Yeah, and I'll get to you on the focus on that commodity, the rise in commodity, but also the whole supply chain disruption and maybe even rising labor costs. So when we look at the earnings preview, because we have the big earnings season coming up, starting and moving into high gear this week. But I need to get over to you, Ole, because on energy, we had, headline wise on the natural gas front in Europe, we had this incredible climax and reversal. Russia, helping to balance the market with Vladimir Putin's comments and also some follow-up comments. Russia's happy to supply Europe with more energy, but it needs to be treated more fairly and less like a pariah. These types of statements, that's not a quote of exactly their wording, but that's the gist of what they're saying. But that's all well and good. But we have a new situation in coal in China that you pointed out this morning that I wasn't aware of until you did so. And then the major benchmarks, the major crude benchmarks, new local highs and WTI at a 7-year high. What's this big jump down to this morning?
Yeah, I think the The main thing right now, John, is simply that we are the markets are tight. Russia's talking about increased supplies is all good, but obviously we need to see see the gas actually flowing through those pipelines in order for it to have an impact or a negative impact on price action. So it's basically if you start with crude oil, it is the prospect for gas to oil switching that is continuing to lift the prospects for demand in crude oil. And that's raising also some nervousness regards to OPEC Plus, because they just recently agreed to just carry on rising production by 400,000 barrels a month. And already now, Saudi Aramco was out over the weekend saying that they're already now seeing that this switching activity, where basically because gas is so punitively expensive, some consumers switch to diesel, propane or gas oil. And that's that has already lifted demand by around 500,000 barrels. So the market is tight, and we are, as you mentioned, 70 high in WTI. Not so high in terms of looking back in Brent just yet. We're still looking at that 2018 high, but that surely is the level that the market is currently targeting. And we are starting to see more and more stories about the negative impact of higher energy costs. And obviously, we've just seen the tip of the iceberg. There's going to be a lot of news coming over the coming weeks, and especially now that we head into the earnings season, how this is impacting industries around the world. But just an example, and that's obviously a critical one, on slide 7, this is the North American Fertilizer Price Index. And as you can see, it's getting close to $1,000 a short ton. That is at least three times the average we've seen during the past 4 to 5 years. And what the potential implications for food prices, which are already elevated. We had the UN FAO's index out last week, and you can see we're still running at around 30%, just a bit above 30% year on year. And with higher fertilizer prices, we can either see the price of food go up, or we can see the supply of food go down or not be as strong as we otherwise were hoping for. So this is just another part of the industry. Peter mentioned coal price and solar panels. So there'll be more of these stories over the coming weeks. But for now, with gas prices at these current levels, we are still into levels where this switching is, where the switching makes sense. So expect that to underpin both oil and gas prices.
All right, and so just rewinding a bit on why we ended up the day higher across the yield curve in the U.S. despite that headline disappointment on non-farm payrolls. I think there was a great tweet I retweeted on Friday. That in part, this is because we have a supply situation is the problem in the U.S., not a demand situation in terms of labor. So there's tons of demand. Problem is getting people into work. And part of what is holding people back are these vaccine mandates, which have been a political problem and a practical problem in terms of people actually moving into employment or staying in employment. And we had one of the big drops was minus 144K on local government education. So teachers that basically don't want to get vaccinated. And that's, I think, is probably something that specific vaccine mandate issue is probably something that's holding back hundreds of thousands of people. So even though we have these pandemic era job benefits extensions that expired at the beginning of September, these other issues are cropping up that are preventing people transitioning back into the workforce. And that's really the key here. And so I don't think it has much bearing on what the Fed will do. And I'm sure we're going to see the Fed moving towards that taper at the next FOMC meeting, with probably a 1st December start, given that the meeting is not until early November. And then finally, it's really important to point out, which we also pointed out on Friday, that we wanted to focus a lot on those average hourly earnings. Those notched a 0.6% month-on-month gain, and that's despite something that should have held back the gains, and that was an upward adjustment in the weekly hours worked by 0.2%. Of course, there was a 0.1 revision downward. So really, we could say it was a 0.1 revision, or sorry, a 0.1 rise in the average weekly hours. This is a blistering pace of wage gains on an annualized basis if we continue with this pace. So some things to keep in mind there as we look at these non-farm payrolls changes. It's not just about demand. It's also about supply. So those factors, why couldn't they continue, for example, for October, maybe even November, as long as these vaccine mandates are disrupting things so badly? And then just to wrap up where we are with FX. So with that jump in U.S. yields, we're seeing dollar yen jumping above 112 resistance and into new territory. Hasn't been in since the 2017 to 18 timeframe. Next key levels, as you can see on slide five, I put up a weekly chart there, are into 114.50. That was a very strong resistance line that held several times since all the way back in Q2 of 2017. And then somewhat curiously, we're seeing with this commodity focus, the weaker dollar and stronger commodity currencies. Well, not a weaker dollar. Of course, dollar is strong against the Japanese yen, but it's on its back foot as we're seeing other central banks, of course, leading the charge to higher rates, tighter policy, and the commodity focus boosting commodity currencies. Look at slide six for the overview, and you can see the Canadian dollar and the Norwegian krona trending very, very strongly. I think that's likely set to continue as long as crude oil continues to rip higher. Question, however, once we get to some point where that becomes a tipping factor to more, you know, significantly more equity market volatility, whether we get a ton of two-way volatility in currencies like that. But Aussie also challenging key levels. Aussie dollar challenging above 73 as sort of a pesky line of resistance, been holding back Aussie for a couple of weeks. And then note on that dollar CAD chart I put there on slide six, that 125 is quite a big level, 200-day moving average, and a place where sort of support was clustering over the last couple of months. So we have an interesting duality here where the dollar is actually quite weak against the strongest currencies, and the yen is by far the weakest with its sensitivity to yields rising. And
if I just may add on that, in the weekly cut report, which we published over the week, well, we will publish today, it basically found that the speculative dollar length jumped by 43% last week. There are now short positions held against the dollar in all the major crosses except the Kiwi. And that latest jump, as you also say, it's interesting. It happened during a week where the dollar actually didn't appreciate that much. So, so there's quite a so not that we've reached the tipping point yet in terms of extended dollar longs, but I think it's probably one that's worth keeping an eye on. That there's really been quite a bit of a surge into dollar longs during the past couple of weeks. So obviously, if the price action doesn't back it up, then that could create some fireworks.
Yeah, and specifically among the currencies, the one with the positioning most extended is the Australian dollar. And that's quite a short position. It's been built up over quite some time, minus 90,000 contracts. That is, I'm just actually trying to pull up a chart here. That's the most extreme positioning on the short side that we've seen. I keep scrolling a chart, basically ever. So we've been approximately there back on the long side back in 2012. And this is the shortest the market has ever been in the U.S. futures market, at least, of the Aussie dollar in terms of non-commercial shorts. So they're just, even if it's only a tactical thing, the risk is with going through lines in the sand on the chart that you get a squeeze effect on those positions. So an interesting one there, and thanks for pointing that out as well. Okay, let's go back over to the equity space, because this is a week. We've talked so much about inflation. We're seeing it being, you know, crystallized in these commodity price rises on top of what was previously a bit more the focus, and that was the supply chain disruptions. You saw some signs, Peter, in some of those key couple of companies with the extensive logistics in their you know, makeup, that there was, you know, some uncertainty. What are you looking for this week? I guess mostly in terms of big companies, it's financials, but there's other stuff going on too.
Yeah, so the first week is always about U.S. financials. You can see it on slide nine, and I've highlighted in red the ones that we should track this week. So starting on Wednesday, we have Delta Airlines and J.P. Morgan Chase, and J.P. Morgan Chase simply being one of the world's largest banks, massive footprint across asset management, commercial banking, consumer banking, credit card, you know, the whole shebang. So we'll be watching at JP Morgan Chase. It's always a good lead into what's going on in across all the different sub industries in the financial sector. And Delta Airlines obviously is important because we have US air passenger traffic back to almost pre-pandemic lows. Curious to see what the supply demand situation is and how prices, price formation and the yield factor is in that industry. Thursday, Bank of America, interesting for their footprint in the U.S. Commercial and consumer banking business. And then Citigroup, they always have, it's always interesting to track because of their larger exposure to the emerging markets. And then you have the Shenzhen Mining Group in China reporting on Friday, which is one of the, if not the largest, I think, mining operation or company in China. They extract everything from zinc, iron ore, gold, I think also a little bit of copper. Will can correct me if I'm wrong on that, but it's that will be the first lead-in from the mining sector on what to expect. And you're absolutely right. We have had John, ASOS reporting this morning about supply constraints. You know, factories are closed in Vietnam. It's have impacted Adidas and Nike. We have had warning shots from FedEx. Container freight prices are still high. Now we have these power prices and energy prices. I mean, and you talked about the wages, hourly earnings in Europe. Steen talked on an internal meeting about both now Japan and the UK turning its attention towards, income transfers and focus on getting wages up. So talked extensively on this theme in our podcast, you know, the capital versus labor. And as capital have won for the last 40 years, the labor will probably take its share of winnings over the next decade. So basically, you have a cocktail of every single input parameter for a company is going higher. Even the interest rates are going higher in Germany and the US. And with the inflation pressures building, that source of financing or cost of finance will also go up. And that's why people are talking about a stagflation light environment. And if you look back in history, it's not a good environment for equities. As Warren Buffett has said, inflation is the worst that can hit a company. It consumes capital. He flagged in 2008, back then when we had galloping commodity prices, that it was getting really bad for companies and bad things would happen. And we got the financial crisis. Obviously, was a lot of reasons for that, not only rising commodity prices, but it is just a bad thing. And as I said in our internal meeting, John, it's important to note that even if we have nominal interest rate trailing inflation expectations and realized prices right now, they are, rising inflation is de facto tightening financial conditions and the de facto the discount rate, because it acts as a hurdle rate for return on capital. So companies that are not profitable should in theory be squeezed more by investors because of rising inflation, because you might feel richer from rising equity prices, but you don't eat richer if inflation is going higher. So I think it's probably we're looking into the most important earnings season in many years.
Wow, that's an interesting one to look forward to. And just on the topic of interest rate rises and signaling from central banks, we had over the weekend a couple more signals from the Bank of England that they're really starting to get uncomfortable and looking to shift rates higher. One of the noted hawks, Saunders, was out saying that rate hikes could come earlier than expected, and even Governor Bailey himself echoing something along the same lines. Also interesting, we saw sterling versus the dollar trying to break higher this morning. Local new highs there is a really key area into 136.50 plus, and that was beaten back. I don't know if it's this squabble over the Irish border that is part of it. There was a couple of comments out just while we were recording this podcast. Irish Foreign Minister warning that they're very close to the point where the EU will say enough and we can't compromise anymore. So we have to watch that as a one-off factor. But UK rates have just screamed higher and reflecting a strong repricing of where the Bank of England is going to be. The two-year swap rate is at 90 basis points this morning, up something like 24 basis points over the course of just a week or so. So adding to the pressure there, for sure. And we have more macro data up this week as well. If we can look at the macro calendar overview on slide 10, with at least in terms of the US, the CPI data up on Wednesday, the FOMC minutes should be quite interesting because of the variety of views on the among the voters and the members of the Fed. US Fed's Brainard, we continue to have to watch her because of course, these Fed scandals with trading, lowering the odds that we're going to see Fed Chair Powell renominated by Biden. There was a statement last week, I'm not sure if we covered it on the podcast, in which he spoke favorably of Biden, but he said he was looking into this, of course, acts of impropriety and then what happens there. So really net-net, I don't think it really impacts much where the Fed policy will go and these other issues that are so dominant. But let's skip that for now. Key inflation, global inflation benchmark, that Chinese PPI up on Thursday, and then the September retail sales from the U.S. out on Friday. I think it's going to be a very interesting and busy week ahead. Stay on your toes. And hopefully later today, we'll have a special podcast that we'll be releasing. I just want to tease it briefly, but let's see what we're able to get squared away with that. And so you can look forward to a one-off special edition in addition to our daily podcast, hopefully in the coming day or so. That's it for today. We'll be back tomorrow with our regular Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.